Hello, and welcome to the Text in Us podcast. I'm your host, George Fricks, and I'm here with my co-host, L. Grover Fricks, to resume our discussions in Exodus chapter 33.
That's right. We are in the thick of it. Let's see what happens. Scroll of Shemot, chapter 33. This is the word of the Lord. Yahweh spoke to Moshe. Walk, ascend from this. You and the people who lifted you from the land of Mitzrayim to the land which I swore to Abraham, to Yitzchak, and to Yaakov, saying, to your seed I will give her. I will send before your face an angel. I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amori, the Chiti, the Prizi, the Chivi, and the Yuvusi, to a land gushing with milk and honey, for I will not ascend in the midst of you, for you are a hard-necked people, lest I eat you on the path. The people heeded this evil word, and they mourned. No man put on his ornaments. For Yahweh said to Moshe, say to the sons of Israel, you are a hard-necked people. In one moment I will ascend in your midst and finish you. Now take down your ornaments from upon you. Oh, that I might know what to do for you. The sons of Israel snatched off their ornaments from the mountain of the sword. Moshe took the tent. He pitched it outside the camp, a wide distance outside the camp. He called to it, Tent of the Appointed Time. It was so that all who sought Yahweh departed to the tent of the appointed time that was outside the camp. It was that as Moshe departed to the tent, all the people rose. They were stationed, each man at the opening of his tent, to gaze after Moshe until he had entered the tent. It was as Moshe entered the tent, a pillar of cloud descended. He stood at the door of the tent. The Lord spoke with Moshe. All the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the opening of the tent. All the people rose and bowed, each at the door of his tent. Yahweh spoke to Moshe face to face, as a man speaks to his neighbor. He would return to the camp. His attendant, Yehoshua, son of Nun, increase. The young man did not withdraw from the tent. Moshe said to Yahweh, see, you say to me, bring up this people, but you do not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, I know you in name. Also, you have found patronage in my eyes. Now, please, if I have found patronage in your eyes, please let me know your path. Oh, I would know you, that I would find patronage in your eyes. See, for your people is this nation. He said, my face will walk with you. I will rest you. He said to him, if your face does not walk, do not bring us up from this place, for how will it be known that I have found patronage in your eyes, I and your people, except in your walking with us? I and your people will be separate from all the people who are upon the face of the dirt. Yahweh said to Moshe, also this word that you have spoken I will do, for you have found patronage in my eyes. I know you in name. He said, show me, please, your heaviness. He said, I will cross all my goodness over upon your face. I will call in the name of Yahweh before your face. I will be patron to whom I will be patron. I will nurture whom I will nurture. He said, you cannot see my face, for no human shall see me and live. Yahweh said, look here, a place of myself. You shall be stationed upon the rock. It will be when my heaviness crosses over, I will place you in the cleft of the rock. I will hedge you in with my palm while I cross over. I will turn aside my palm. You shall see my back. My face will not be seen. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
What a doozy. Okay, I think I was referencing this portion last week as if we had already read it together, and talking about how Moshe would go out to the tent outside of the camp and everybody would see him. And lo and behold, it's here instead. So apologies to everyone who was confused last week. This is what I was referencing. What are our portions, George?
It is all one portion, all 22 verses.
I mean, the correct answer was the Lord is our portion.
The Lord is our portion. I was getting there. You cut me off.
Sure. Okay, great. All one thing, because it's all one conversation pretty much between God and Moshe.
Yeah, not just with very little else. There is nothing else. It is
a dialogue.
Yeah, it is a dialogue. Let's go ahead and get into what they have to say to each other in this private conversation that we have recorded.
Sounds good. Almost as if Moshe must have written this
thing. Must have. Must have.
Okay. The chaotic energy is coursing through my veins and my arms as I say that. I can feel the power.
People are cringing. They're reaching for the close tab. Okay, let's start with verse 1. Yahweh spoke to Moshe, "Walk, ascend from this, you and the people who you lifted from the land of Mitzrayim."
Crazy that God is crediting Moshe, by the way, with that miracle, as if it wasn't God who did it.
Yeah, you know, and he did this last chapter as well.
Right.
And, you know, in that chapter, I kind of took it as a fine, you don't want me to deal with them. They're your people.
Right. But now it feels almost like he's saying that if it wasn't for Moshe's partnership and his assent to be included in the mission,
yeah,
that God would not have done that.
Right. And there is an excellent form and teaching on that that kind of focuses on chapter 2. So if you have time and desire, it's worth the read. But essentially talking about how chapter 32 is the crux of Moshe's story. That's his peak.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Uses the Winston Churchill quote of Moshe's finest hour.
Oh, wow.
Is chapter 32. So,
wow. The murder.com is his finest hour. Fascinating. Well, okay.
Well, you got to go read
the beginning of the story. He was a murderer. His finest hour. He's also a murderer. I guess it checks out. Moshe doesn't change. Just
gotta,
buries
no,
them
no,
all
no.
in the sand.
Got to go read it. It's not. There's more than that which happens in that chapter.
Sure.
But let's stick in chapter 33 here.
Sure.
It starts off with saying, walk, ascend from this. And the sages kind of talk about what is God trying to say there because they're on the top of a mountain. Mm. What are they ascending from?
Okay, can I say my theory and then we can see if the rabbis agree with me?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So we started out there in Mitzrayim and we've had all this conversation about ascension and we talked about the mythological perspective in which our heroes, Jungian perspective thrown there. Why not? You have to descend down into the depths.
Great theologian.
Oh.
By the way.
Gosh. There's a, I want to say bucket of monkeys and that's just not the right aphorism. But that's okay. Anyway, the hero has to descend in all of these mythologies into Hades
right.
and then come back out. So it's almost as if when God says we're ascending, even though we're still on a mountaintop, that it's a spiritual ascension, that they're not all the way out yet. They're not
yeah.
in the promised land yet. And so it is still an ascension.
Right. Yeah, and that is kind of, I mean, not with those specific, you know, details, but that is most of what they're trying to say. The other thing that they say is that Jerusalem is just really high up there.
I mean, it did snow while I was there.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a higher plane plateau than they're at right now. So
I mean, you can look up pictures from the Sinai Peninsula of this area, and it is gorgeous, and it is also extraordinarily mountainous, rocky peaks. So I'm not so sure about that, but you know what, Evs? Sure. Jerusalem is so high.
It's so high.
So high.
Yes. We can get into that archaeological research later on how high they were. But to the land which I swore to Abraham, to Yitzhak, to Yaakov, saying, to your seed I will give her.
I left it as her because the land is what's feminine there. All nouns have genders in Hebrew. But it's a, like a, wedding language. It's a bridal language.
Yeah, so I left it that way. That's kind of the way I was seeing that as well. So I'm glad that I'm not alone in that perspective. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I totally saw that as the, bridal language.
Awesome.
So totally agree with you. Verse 2, I will send before your face an angel.
Of music.
Probably not. Because it seems to be about driving out these other peoples. And I don't think it's the
Gerard
bad singing
Butler.
That causes them to leave.
No Gerard Butler. I do find it super fascinating, though. As we're keeping an eye toward the conquest and seeing, like, what's going to happen there. We've had so many instances where Moshe strikes off on his own and he says it's God doing it. And yet it's him, you know, freestyling. And so I'm very curious when we get to the conquest in 8 years.
Yeah.
To see, that's an exaggeration, maybe, I don't know. To see how much of that is God's actual command and how much is not. And the first time we saw this God talking about how it will happen, he said that he's going to send the locust, right?
Right.
Previous episode, God is very explicit that God is going to be the one who does it, and
right.
that he is going to be the one to scooch them out by what seem like natural means, perhaps supernatural means, but that all Israel would need to do is see their backs disappearing. Now, here again, he also says that it's going to be him. If you want to take Yehoshua's side, though, we just talked 4 minutes ago about the fact that, you know, it's us assenting to God's mission that accomplishes things, right? And so Yehoshua can always just take that theology and be like, yeah, God's driving him out at the tip of my sword.
Right? Yeah, that's
so
fair.
I don't like it, but just being consistent / honest.
Yeah, and for those of you counting, we have these six nations here. And you might be thinking to yourself, wait a second, what about the Girgashites? Why aren't they mentioned amongst the peoples
How
here?
How did you know? That was what I was thinking, and all of our listeners, I'm sure.
Yeah, but Rashi is here to save the day.
Oh, phew.
Yes, and he reminds us that in Deuteronomy chapter 7, seven are mentioned, including the Girgashites, but it's just the fact that they arose and left of their own accord before the Israelites got there. So that answers that question.
My
close case.
Late night tossings and turnings have been laid to rest. Thank yep. you, Rashi.
And therefore they're not mentioned here. So you might have found that in the Jerusalem Talmud if you're reading that literature at this time.
Yeah.
Or Leviticus Rabbah. So lots of places talk about this. Many people know about it.
Many people.
Yes.
Okay. You heard it here third.
Third, at least. Or fourth, depending on how well read you are.
Okay, we've got that land gushing with milk and honey.
A classic text.
A classic line that we often miss the miraculous connotations. We've talked about that before, but milk only happens at a certain time of year. Honey only comes at a certain time of year. So this is
America.
Remarkable. Oh boy. Oh no. A surprise hard ride into Christian nationalism. No one saw it coming. For I will not ascend in the midst of you, for you are hard-necked people, lest I eat you on the path. Okay, what do you make of that connection that he's saying, I'm going to take you to the promised land because I'm not going to ascend in the midst of you because you're being annoying?
Yeah.
What do you make of that logic string?
Yeah, it's an unusual, I don't know, order in that the way it's layered, it's hard to figure out what it's implying. Rashi is going to talk about how in this, what God is saying is that if I were to be down there amongst you on this journey.
Oh, like it's about the angel.
That even though my anger is only for a moment, I'm going to destroy you all.
Also
because
relatable.
I'm not going to be able to take it. And so therefore, I will not be amongst you. I will instead send this angel. And I love that Moshe's going to be like, nah, because you said this. Yeah. I don't think so. And then he's going to go park the tent outside the camp. Like, is this what you wanted? You wanted to be out here?
Right. Yes. Moshe is giving toddler energy when the toddler steps over and they're like, actually, you did say we're going to eat mac and cheese for lunch.
Yeah. He's just, you know, scooting the tent further and further away. Can you hear me now? From the camp. So that's kind of the way that, again, Rashi is going to say that this text is implying God's anger is an issue, that he is trying to separate himself from the people so that he does not
eat them on the path. Enough?
Yep.
Far enough away. Interesting. Yeah, that makes sense as a way to stack stuff. I'm still curious about the ascending part, but it makes sense.
I think that's referencing otherwise. To what it was said before. You will ascend from here.
Oh.
I'm not going to ascend with you from here, but you will ascend from here.
Yeah. Thank you. Bringing it back. Just a little exegesis. Sometimes I need help.
Yeah, that's probably just a, you know, Doc Hypo insert into the text.
Whatever. The people heeded this evil word.
Bum, bum, bum.
I do like that we are, you know, so
freaked
precious.
Out.
Yeah, that we just take that all away. Because we don't like that word being next to God. But there it is in the text. Let's not hide what's in scripture. They mourned. No man put on his ornaments. I thought that it's hilarious because in translations they go with no one, which all the time we're going masculine, 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 masculine. But now here,
especially in this chapter,
when it is masculine, then translators are like, actually gender neutral because we're weirded out apparently by men wearing ornaments, despite the very long historical era of men wearing ornaments all the time.
Yeah. Rashi is going to say specifically that these are crowns.
Oh, okay.
Which is interesting. I don't know exactly where that line of thinking comes from, but that they receive crowns from God at Mount Horeb.
Jeez. Okay.
And then they take them off.
So Rashi's from France. Just to be clear, he is not from that area. So he's bringing some of his own culture, as we all do. But like when we were reading the Priestley section, they're talking about like diadems in the KJV or whatever. Yep. And instead it was like a flower that you stick on your turban.
Yeah.
So... but sure, yeah, lots of crowns, so many of them. Tiaras all over the place, but only on the men. They just let the men loose in Claire's and they went hog wild. And that's what actually the Exodus looked like.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So God then says to Moshe, make sure you tell them, say to the sons of Israel, you are a hard-necked people. In one moment, I will ascend in your midst and finish you. Finish him. Now take down your ornaments from upon you. Oh, that I might know what to do for you. And then, of course, after God tells Moshe to tell them that, the sons of Israel snatched off their ornaments from the mountain of the sword, which I love that imagery of like, oh, dang, geez, oh, no.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh. Stuff it in their bags, you know. Whoopsie daisies, which it is wild that there wasn't a mourning time for all the dead people. Like if you want to go with Moshe and the sons of Levi didn't really kill anybody. If you want to be on that team, which I'm a little leery of being because it would fit my biases just a little bit too nicely. An argument, a tally in that column is the fact that everybody's not like you just killed thousands of us, and now we've got to take care of their bodies and go through the mourning process, which is extensive, right? None of that says that it happens until after God is speaking to them and tells them that they're a hard-necked people and that he might eat them. Then they mourn, which
right.
also relatable.
It's very Samwise moment in the Shire. Gandalf catches him eavesdropping and threatens to turn him into Sam does asks him not to, you know, turn him into a frog or something. Uh-huh. And he says, oh, I have a better plan for you.
Right. I'm going to send you with my angel.
Right.
Frodo is the angel. The syntax there is also interesting. They snatched off their ornaments from the Mountain of the Sword. It's like, had they put their ornaments on the mountain? Were they decorating things still? You know, they're being festive because of the giving, the wedding ceremony, the ketubah, the giving of the law and all of that. And now they're like, ooh, wrong vibe. Or is that just the place that they snatched off their ornaments? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you go with Rashi's interpretation, okay. right, they're wearing them.
Okay.
And they take them off of their heads.
Okay. Well, fair. Fair interpretation, Rashi.
So.
Still don't like the crowns, but that's okay.
Yeah. And, you know, he's going to connect that I will consider what to do to you as part of the conversation around the golden calf mm-hmm. punishment.
Okay.
Which is kind of left determined resolved. And resolved in chapter 32. So this is, I'm coming back down, take off your ornaments, and I'm going to decide what I'm going to do with you.
It is awkward.
Like halfway through the party.
Yeah, it's like...
Record scratch.
Right, it's like the teens are having a Halloween party and they're all wearing like dumb outfits from Spirit
right.
Halloween, and then like... the parents show up and they get hauled off to the police stations and they're still dressed as giant cows or whatever.
Right.
It's like, could you not? Yeah, that preposition is the letter lamed, and it can be two or four. So you can say that God was saying, what am I going to do to you? Which
okay.
feels punitive and kind of scary in parental way. Or what am I going to do for you is more provisional, right? Like, there is a systemic problem in this plant I am
right.
growing. What am I going to do?
What are we going to do about it?
For this plant to try to fix this systemic problem. Moshe then does something that I think implies superhuman strength, because he took the tent. Now, this thing is not from Coleman. This thing wasn't picked up from Walmart or the big store with the fish and all the dead animals. What's that? Cabela's. I got it. Okay. So Moshe is not hauling around tents from Cabela's, from Walmart, from wherever. He is hauling around the thing, not the whole thing, but these things that we described for chapters, layers and layers and layers of heavy embroidered fabric.
Right.
A bajillion poles.
And covers
and
gold.
And gold. Things engraved with
other
gold.
Metals. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just takes it and pitches it by himself. So I think Eliyahu, when he makes that altar by himself, it's giving Moshe for me.
Yeah.
Which, of course, they are the big icons and they're going to show up at the Mount of Transfiguration and everything. I think that this is a callback to Moshe being like, fine, I would do this by myself. None of you are invited. I'm going to drag this all in one go, perhaps, if it's supernatural. But
right.
who knows? Who knows? Captain America did. He just jabbed himself with some super serum and hauled it all by himself. A wide distance outside the camp.
Yeah.
Very Hagar.
Yeah. The sages are going to say that's 2,000 cubits, and they reference
yes.
the distance between the ark and the people that comes later when the temple is built as being 2,000 cubits. So saying that's their marker.
Okay. Shady, but that's a figure that's made up. And my reference is referencing something that's actually in the text. That was overly shady. I now feel ashamed. Like I need to go repent for having an ego. But wide distance is specifically the term that is used for when Hagar sticks Yishmael.
Goes a distance away.
Mm-hmm, under the bush.
A bow shot.
Yes. And I like that reference because it is like Moshe is taking his precious thing, which he loves, which is the only way that the promise is going to be fulfilled, right? Because Hagar had had this promise about her son that was going to be born. And he's taking it away from the danger, right? Which in Hagar's situation was Sarah, but in Moshe's situation is the people. And he puts it away and he's going to call on God to try to see what is possible and what's going on. So I like mine better than the Ark situation. Okay. But
well, I mean, you know, 2,000 cubits could be a bow shot. We don't know.
That sounds like a really good bow. It sounds like some Welsh longbow action.
Yeah.
At the best.
The Egyptian Welsh longbow that they have with them.
Right, right. So many, you know, Celtic Britons in,
right, they
in
traded
Egypt.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Together.
They did trade, but... Okay, it was as Moshe departed to the tent, all the people rose. They were stationed, each man at the opening of his tent, to gaze after Moshe until he had entered the tent. It was as Moshe entered the tent, a pillar of cloud descended. He stood at the door of the tent. The Lord spoke with Moshe. All the people saw the pillar of the cloud standing at the opening of the tent. All the people rose and bowed, each at the door of his tent.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of... very specific, you know, seemingly ritual that's going on there, mm-hmm. right? That it, you know, doesn't say anywhere that they were instructed to do this.
Right.
It's just happening.
Right.
You know, so is there some cultural relevance behind this sign of respect, possibly, of Moses going to the tent? Or
there totally could be, and I could just not know it, but... In my mind, I imagine it organically, like they're waiting to hear what God's going to do about the golden calf situation. And you're sitting around and you're nervous mm-hmm. and you're, you know, making your bread or whatever, whittling the day away.
Yeah.
And then like, babe, Moshe's getting up. Go, 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 go.
Right, you know? Right.
You're going to like pop your head out of your tent. Watch him, see what happens. Is God going to tell him that we all need to die? Like, let's find out what happens. And
right.
then, like, somebody bows and everyone's like, oh, that's a good idea. Let's show our reverence, right, for this moment and try to show that our allegiance still lies with Adonai and not the calf that's gone.
Yeah.
But it could be a thing that I'm just unaware of.
Well, whatever the case may be, here we have verse 11, Yahweh spoke to Moshe face to face as a man speaks to his neighbor, and he would return to the camp. Now, this is interesting because we're going to get to the section where people are debating about the no one can see my face and live conversation.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like, unless this is... face-to-face with a neighbor who is the guy hiding behind the fence and you never actually see his face.
Interesting.
You know, what exact... I mean, is face-to-face not face-to-face in this instance? You know, when people are debating the can Moses actually have seen God's face and lived? Mm-hmm. Because this says face-to-face as a man speaks to his neighbor.
Right. Yeah, I mean... I think it depends how technical you want to get about what face-to-face means, but also how technical you want to get about your glory passing by.
Yeah.
Like, is God's glory the same thing as his face, or is that a presumption?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like his train, you know? Is it an angelic host? I don't
right.
know that his...
Sages are going to say Shekhinah.
Okay, sure. They've got a whole thing there.
Yep.
Shekhinah is the word for like the presence, the abiding presence of God. And the abiding presence of God, as you can hear, it has an ah at the end, which is a feminine ending. And so in rabbinic literature, the Shekhinah is often...
Slay girl.
personified. Heresy, George. Personified as a female figure who hosts Shabbat, for instance. Like, okay, you have to stop what you're doing on Shabbat in order to welcome in the Shekhinah, this female presence of God, which is interesting that that's not really present at all in Protestantism. But so it doesn't surprise me that they have an initial placement of her in Torah, because they need that for their tradition to work right. So,
well, we'll kind of get a little bit more into the face-to-face in just a second. We also have here Yehoshua, who becomes this like tent hermit.
I mean, hey, I think that's like the most epic, most beautiful, most holy epithet, like other than Enoch, who walked with God.
Right? Sure.
Is that he did not leave the tent of the presence of God. That's like goals, man. That's amazing. He gets to be leader later. And what is his training? Nothing but sitting in God's presence and listening in on all these conversations that somebody else is having with God, which could be of great encouragement for some people who feel like they've been in a learning stage forever, right? That there is such wealth to be had just by sitting at somebody's feet, listening to the conversation that they have with God. And then someday God's going to use you to do some incredibly wild business.
Yeah. Verse 12, Moshe is going to say to Yahweh, "See, you say to me, bring up this people." And I loved how you like got this little snarky attitude when you were reading this in the in the early part of the recording. You just kind of switched to the, "Hey now, you said this, bring up this people, but you do not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, I know you in name. Also, you have found patronage in my eyes." So, yeah, so a little bit of snark from Moshe saying, hey, this is what you said. Mm-hmm. You need to, you know, stick to your end of the deal that you said you would do. But he also does it in this way of like, if I have found patronage in your eyes, right? If you have seen me as someone as worthy of doing this, then...
Do it. Then show up.
Right. And also that bold request, right? Let me know your path. Oh, that I would know you. This almost is like a, you know, could be David writing here.
Right.
Right. That I might find patronage in your eyes. See, for your people is this nation.
Yes. That's one of the things I like about the going with the translation of patronage instead of the more theological
favor,
grace or favor, same word. Because it's less tangible and less empowering when you're like, oh God, for me anyway, everybody else might have a totally different feeling when they hear that. But for me, hearing I have the patronage of God, God has chosen me to bestow upon the resources that I need to complete the task that he has given for me to do. And it's like, oh, of course. You know, if you are working as a secretary and the printer is out of paper, you tell your patron, hey, your printer's out of paper. I need more paper. It is not like a, oh, who am I to ask such a thing of God? Oh, I have only received his grace. It's a, oh, we have roles here. And my role is to ask you for things when I need them because you have everything that I would need. So I need your face. So if you could get down here and not float along angrily, that would be great.
Yeah. And he's going to continue that with, he said, my face will walk with you. I will rest you. Mm. Now, I think we're kind of presuming at this point God is talking.
I think so. It's guesswork with those pronouns.
It is. We get to this weird pattern of Moshe said to Yahweh, or, you know, the Yahweh said to Moshe, and then we get a couple of he said and then he said, but it's not saying who is he in those verses. So verse 14, he said, my face will walk with you. I will rest you. Verse 15, he said to him, if your face does not walk, do not bring us up from this place. Now, you know, I'm going to presume we've got God saying verse 14 and Moshe responding in verse 15. Mm-hmm. For how will it be known that I have found patronage in your eyes, I and your people?
Right.
Right? So, except in your walking with us. So,
it's gotta be.
Yeah. Just noting the pattern there of how that seems to flow, because it is confusing and,
right. But it's beautiful, though, that God is the one saying, I will rest you.
Right.
If we remember from the last chapter, there was a lot of Noach. Wow. Freudian slip. There was a lot of Moshe trying to comfort God from his anger and rest God from his anger. And so now God is saying he's the one who's going to rest.
Right.
Moshe.
And there's this interesting piece at the end of 16, right? How are people going to know that we are your people if you do not walk with us, right? How will we be separate from everybody else on the face of the earth?
Right. Which is, again, calling on that patronage relationship.
Right.
Like, it is known that I am part of your household. And so if I'm walking around like one of your kids, and yet you are not with me and you are not backing me, if you are not coming with me, what does that make you look like? Right. I and your people will be separate from all the people who are upon the face of the dirt. What makes us different? What makes us holy? What makes us set apart? It is the presence of God going with us, not all the things we do.
Right. And here in verse 17, we have the flip. Yahweh said to Moshe, also, this word that you have spoken, I will do, for you have found patronage in my eyes. I know you in name. So kind of an affirmation of all of those requests.
Mm-hmm.
He said, show me, please, your heaviness. So again, we don't know who the he is here. But going off of the previous pattern,
right,
we can presume that if the first one is Moshe said to Yahweh, and then God replied, and then Moshe replied.
Right. The author has got to be rolling their eyes in heaven like, you guys, this is so obvious. It goes back and forth. Why are you making such a big
deal?
Right.
Can we overlay a similar pattern here? Yahweh said to Moshe, and then the first he said is Moshe replying, and the second he said is Yahweh replying.
Yep. Yep. Straightforward. I wish dearly that I could break my own rule and put a different word in there. But we've been going for kavod, for this idea of weightiness, been using that translation the whole scripture. I wish here that I could say something else like honor. It just sounds funny to me. It sounds like, you know, a different context, a different genre of literature. So I wish that I could go with honor, because that's what I think the cultural meaning is. But
it's a footnote.
Yes. But alas, here we are. I don't want to break my own rules. And so that's what we have. And I love God doesn't tell him yes, right? He says, show me your kavod, show me your glory, show me your heaviness, show me your honor. And God responds, I will cross all my goodness.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I think we love, especially people who are struggling in leadership, right? We feel like if I had more power, if I had more clout, if I had more weight with these people, if I could understand what your weightiness is like, that would rub off on me. And then I could go back to my people and they would finally listen to me, right? They would finally do what they've said that they would do.
Mm-hmm.
And God says, I hear you and I will let you see a piece of me, but the piece of me that you get to see that is actually going to be transformative to you is not my power, my heaviness, my weightiness, my glory, my intimidation, right? But rather my goodness. And it's my goodness that is going to cross by upon your face.
Yeah.
God calls in his own name. That's weird. I will call in the name of Yahweh before your face. I have no idea what that means, why God would call on his own name. There must be some kind of meaning to calling upon that I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Moshe references this before again in the verse chapter 32 when he's talking to God about why God should not actually go and kill everyone. And he says in chapter 32, you using your own name as leverage, right, as the bargaining chip, mm-hmm. said that we would be your people. Right. And so this could be God reaffirming that for right. Moshe.
It's also a nice parallelism between God telling Moshe that he knows Moshe in his name. Mm-hmm. And so now it's that one. But I think you're more on the money than I am there, that it's referencing that. He follows that up with stating, I will be patron to whom I will be patron, and I will nurture whom I will nurture.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a clever both comfort and assurance, and also a barb in Moshe's side, who's having so much trouble with these people, right? That on the one hand, it's a blessing to Moshe, and it's a blessing to hear, like, it's not, I am patron to those who succeed all the time and never murder 3,000 people, even when I didn't tell them to. Right? I will be patron to those who execute my plan perfectly, who never freestyle. But rather, I will be patron to whom I will have be a patron, right? Very Romans, very Psalms. I have appointed you to the order of Melchizedek, and I do not change my mind. And then following that up with, I will nurture whom I will nurture, is, I think, again, that's a little barb to Moshe, who wants to experience the honor of God, the majesty, the glory of God. And he says, you need my goodness instead. I think this is Moshe answering him ultimately about this larger conversation. What are we doing about the golden calf? And I think he's saying, I'm going to nurture them. That's God's answer to us wildly going off the path. And our leadership's, our human response might be to want to cut everything off. But God's ultimate response is instead nurturing that person who's gone astray is what is going to bring them back. But then there appears to be a gap. Because we right. have this reiteration of he said, which is a grammatical feature. People have asked me if that's really true, because they've heard it in these different places, that if we have a break and then he said again. And the answer is yes. It indicates the passage of time. This is a new paragraph. You don't just break it up for no reason, just like in the play or in texts. Well, I guess not in text, because double texting is a thing. Time has passed. I don't know what happened in that time. But then, presumably, God says, BT dubs, you cannot see my face, for no human shall see me and live, which goes against, again, what was said earlier with it. They were speaking face to face.
Right. So yeah.
What if this is Moshe talking? What if it's Moshe saying, I don't want you to see me, because what if he's ashamed from his murder festival?
Maybe, right? We're not at the point where Moshe's wearing a veil yet, I don't believe.
Nope.
And so that's interesting in that, you know, that fits with the pattern of the first he said was Moshe, the second he said is God, and now we're back to the third he said, which should be Moshe, but it doesn't specify. And then right after that, verse 21, Yahweh said.
Right.
Right? So that would confirm the pattern. However, it's a weird thing to say.
It is. I have to tell you, every time you start saying he said, she said, all I hear is the Switchfoot line. He said, she said, live like no tomorrow.
That's right.
Every moment it keeps going on.
yep. So I think your argument is super interesting. I am not sure how that is. That like a, is he making a metaphorical statement, you know, about his life? it doesn't, you know, that's not a literal statement because we just walked through, he walks through the center of camp to get there. Everybody watches him go.
Yeah.
Right. So he's not killing everybody every time he does that.
Right.
So what would be happening in that instance? The flip side of it, which is the one that, you know, we're going to see debated amongst the sages.
Everybody else.
Also shares some controversy about this because they say, obviously, other people in the text have seen
God's fates.
And they're not dead. Just look at...
they are surely alive.
That's right. They are surely alive. So, you know, they talk about Exodus 24, which we referenced, where a whole bunch of people saw God
face. Right.
Not just face to face. They saw God's face, right? They're seeing God.
They're at a banquet.
And they note the language, right? They saw the God of Israel, that this is saying the same type of interaction.
Yeah.
They also talk about...
I mean, Jesus, obviously, they don't talk about that, but that is a little Trinitarian quandary. If Jesus wholly shares divinity with God, then shouldn't we all die if we look at him?
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure.
Bummer.
They also talk about Isaiah, who sees God's face.
Yep.
They also talk about Ezekiel.
Yep.
And they're like, we have these other instances where this is not true. So what is actually being said here that would make sense of this?
What
one of them is that it's possible that the lo applies to both parts. So they man shall not see me and not live, as in if you see me, you will live forever.
Oh.
And that seeing God is about the eternal state of life and the life beyond. And
okay.
So everyone who passes does see God. And it's not because they saw God that they died, but rather it is being in the world to come in, or the beyond, right?
Okay.
After death, that this essence of God is visible. And so by nature, you usually don't see him unless you're dead. But it doesn't restrict you from seeing him when you're alive. He just doesn't show himself to people that are living.
Okay, so they're playing with the second half of it more than the first half.
Yes.
Yeah, so the Hebrew says the human know, see, and live.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of isolating that part and being
right.
Like, because dead people see God. Okay, interesting. Fascinating. Who knows?
Yep.
Divine revelation, call in if you know. The last thing here is God, once again, what a guy, accommodates Moshe in this conversation. I'm a little bit confused even how we got here, like as this conversation escalates and it seems to be about, right, God says, I'm not going to walk with you, just an angel will. And Moshe says, no, you need to walk with us because everyone has to know that your patronage comes with us. And he says, ugh, I know you. And then Moshe says, I want to see you, which is very, or a part of you, feels very intimate, right, and relational.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, it's just like not part of the mission. And I kind of love that God's not all caught up in getting them from point A to point B when Moshe wants to stop and wants to experience God in a new way. God's like, yeah, man, let's figure it out. I'm not going to show you my glory, but you can see my goodness.
Right.
And I can't do it this way, but I'll do it this way. And I think that should be encouraging to us who are often so mission focused and end goal oriented and can stop to who often can forget to stop and try to experience God, especially in new ways. That seems fishy to us who like routine. So anyway, God says, look here, a place with me or a place of myself, and translated either way, you shall be stationed upon the rock. last time we had that word stationed, there were at the Sea of Reeds.
Okay.
So it has a similar feel. Back then it was station yourself and see the salvation of the Lord works on your behalf. And now it's station yourself on the rock. And now it is heaviness crosses over. So the heaviness is there. He just doesn't get to see it. He gets to see his goodness. It'll right. be when my heaviness crosses over. I will place you in the cleft of the rock. I will hedge you in with my palm while I cross over. That crossover word I love is because that's what he calls his people, right? Hebrew means to cross over. And so God is doing what he calls his people to do continually. I will turn aside my palm. You shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. I'm curious about this. And this is kind of setting the conversation aside of no one can see me and live. What if God is only having Moshe see his back because it's a leadership lesson? Like, what if it's not just about this experiential relationship with God? But what okay. if he's saying, okay, I'm leading you. I'm going to walk by, but you can only see my back because it's mirroring when Moshe walks by out to the tent. He's not including all the people in that conversation with God because he's like, look, you guys failed. Stay in the camp. I'm going to go solve this problem.
Yeah.
And they see his back as he's walking out of camp. And so now God is saying, how does that feel? You're so close to getting to be part of seeing me and you only get to see my back instead.
Yeah, I like that.
I'll cover you up and then open up my palms so you can see me at that time. What's that like, Moshe? So that's what I think is going on.
Fascinating.
Yep.
Like it. I like it.
If you have any other thoughts, innovations, ideas, questions, please send them to textandus@gmail.com. We're finishing up Exodus sooner than later.
Yeah, just so a few more weeks.
We'll certainly have a mailbox episode. So if you've been lingering, thinking of something that you've been dying to ask, this is the time. These next couple weeks anyway are the time.
This has been the Text in Us podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope that you will join us again next week for Exodus chapter 34.
Bye!
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit, you know, probably just dicopo, insert.
You want to take the whole line again?
DAC. It's a DAC.
Sounds like Dagnabbit.